You're listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, Liberated Syndication, iTunes, and multiple media channels connected to the TBFS radio network. This top-ranked business talk radio show features the obstacles and challenges that are common to business everywhere around the world. Most importantly, you'll connect with thousands of success stories on how business people overcame these hurdles on their road to success. For any business owner in our listening audience who's facing a particular problem or challenge that you've not been able to solve, you might be concerned about your future, or you're just not satisfied with the financial results in your company. Reach out to us here on the broadcast at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. We'll be happy to put you in touch with hundreds of resources that you may not have been aware are available to your business today, many of which are free. For those of you needing a professional level of assistance in your organization, many of the hosts on the broadcast also coach business owners outside of the show. We have visited with thousands of business people, seen their struggles and challenges, and their solutions to these problems. We have a clue what's working and what's not. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us today at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and the TBFS radio staff, I'm Kevin Hunter. Stay tuned. The Business Forum Show is next. Welcome back to the Business Forum Show. I'm Kevin Hunter. In our remote studio is Jeff Johnson and our guests Rick Diamond and Gary Cohen from CO2 Partners. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Let's get started, Jeff. We'll give both Rick and Gary an opportunity to visit a little bit about their organization and their background. So we'll start with you, Rick.
Well, right now I spend most of my time on an organization I started about 6 years ago called Breathe Freedom from Nicotine. It's clinics help people quit smoking and chewing tobacco. I also spend a fair amount of time on a charity I've been involved with from its beginning with some friends called MinSnap, the Minnesota Spay-Neuter Assistance Program.
Okay, very nice. And Gary, how about you?
Well, I started CO2 Partners about 9 years ago. And CO2 Partners is an executive coaching business. And what we do is we help CEOs and executives of large organizations and small be more successful. It's helping them either grow the business, grow themselves. And it's a very rewarding endeavor for me.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about the connection between both of you, because you were involved together in a company beforehand, and talk about your connection relationship.
Well, it actually started when we were about 5 or 6 years old. Gary and I met at a summer camp on Lake Minnetonka and then went through school together. And in the summer of 1986, we kind of reconnected after college, and I was in law school, and found that we both had an interest in starting a business. We didn't know what we wanted to do. We just knew we wanted to do something.
And so we said, hey, how is it that, who are the people that we know that are really wealthy? And we looked around and we said, boy, it seems like they're all in real estate. Mm-hmm. And so we started thinking about that and going, huh, if they're all in real estate, maybe that's where we should be. So Rick is trained as a lawyer, educated as a lawyer, and actually is a lawyer today, although non-practicing. And so he went to school, so to speak, on real estate law. And I went and took real estate classes to learn about investing in real estate. We also both took a course at the university on investing in real estate. And in one of those courses, I happened to meet these two amazingly charismatic guys. And when I say charismatic, they'd walk into any room and light it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in front because I always do that. These guys are in back, but they just like are center stage for the entire class. And these are pretty uninteresting classes. And
school
so we
is,
quick
school is boring.
Yeah, totally. And so we quickly found friendship, and it was them who kind of got us into the business.
And part of that also stemmed from the fact that once we got far enough into learning about real estate, one of the things that we began to recognize as we started looking at our ability to buy real estate was that it takes a long time to make money in real estate. And it, we finally hit us, the, these wealthy friends of our families who had so much invested in real estate probably didn't make it in real estate. They probably made it somewhere else
and then started investing in real estate.
Well, that became a problem because at 23, 24 years old, we didn't have that big chunk to put as a down payment.
So you were poor?
I won't say poor.
No, we were hardly poor.
Came from families who afforded us very nice lifestyles. And one of the downsides of that, or motivators, depending on your point of view, is our families afforded us a very nice childhood, very nice lifestyle. But as my parents said often, is at some point you're not going to be on the family allowance. You got to decide just how hard you want to work.
It was more
that lifestyle going.
Rick, it was more like golf shirt to riches versus t-shirts to riches.
That's a great way to say it.
That's good. That's good. Well, Kevin, I think, you know, I've spent several hours with these gentlemen, and we're going to have a very entertaining program today.
It's hard to tell, guys. It's hard to tell.
And the ongoing dialogue, I'm going to set the stage for this, and then I suspect I won't have to say a word for the next hour and a half. But as we talk every program, L. Harris Partners is a value creation firm, and we talk about the eight ways to leave a business. And as a reminder, that is a sale, transfer to a company, sell the company to a family member, sell to one or more key employees, sell or all or a portion to an ESOP, an employee stock option plan, sell to one or more co-owners, engage in an IPO, retain ownership but become a passive investor, or liquidate. So, you know, we have looked at other options and we can't find any. So, and we found that one of the most misunderstood of these is the initial public offering or IPO. And we're really lucky today that these gentlemen not only have thriving businesses today, but in their T-shirt to Riches story is one of the steps in the first endeavor or second endeavor that they went through was really growing a business and then doing the IPO. And it's going to be an interesting story on how this came about, the actual process they went through, some luck, some skill, some, I think they underestimate their management ability, or at least they won't talk about it. And then they put all the value drivers in place that we talk about every week about building a competent and stable management team, reliable operating systems, and I think they have some stories about where those might not have been actually in place, but they've fixed them. Solid and a diversified customer base, good financial controls, and improving cash flow. So that's kind of what we talk about every week. We're focusing on the first part of this about what is the IPO, and I think you'll be able to hear about what they went through in this process, and it's a great story. So with that, what is an IPO?
Go ahead, Rick.
They're looking at each other.
Well, for us, it was something that we actually resisted for a while. As a matter of fact, when Gary and I started ACI in 1987, we each ponied up about $2,000. So with $4,000, you can't say that the company was overcapitalized. Mm-hmm. But we were ready to put in a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Well, after the business cards, that only left us with $3,800 or so.
But between a combination of, as you say, hard work, luck, and other things coming into alignment, the company was able to take off and continued to grow. As a matter of fact, one of the things we're most proud about is the fact that ACI did grow an average of 50% a year for over 15 years. Now, one of the things that many people might come to understand is growth generally costs money. But we were always kind
and a
of
lot of it
to carve up the pie. Gare and I always liked the fact that he had 50% and I had 50%. And for many years, we really resisted the idea of bringing in any outside partners and giving away any pieces of the pie.
So if I go back and let me describe for our listening audience, the initial public offering is one of the exit strategies. But what a lot of people don't understand is that, one, it generally produces the highest return to somebody who's getting out of the business. But an IPO actually is not an immediate exit strategy.
Oh, it's far from that.
And it takes many, many activities. So when you do an initial public offering, and we'll go through the details, but ultimately, when you file that registration statement and you sell it, most people, business owners, believe it's a liquidation or a liquidating event for the owners, where in actuality, it is not. It's money into the business. It's an exchange of stock from the company you own, even though it may be the same name, to the publicly traded company. And you have a period of time that you cannot sell that stock. You can't take the money out. There's a whole group of things that I'll let you describe that you can't do. And then it goes on to actually, how do you get out of that business? What happens afterwards? So I think those are kind of the key. So if we could, why don't we get started? I know we're in the next segment, we're going to talk about the history, how you started the company, and it's a great story, and our listening audience is going to really like that. And then we'll go into, once we get to the point of the IPO, the actual events after the IPO.
The other thing I'd like you gentlemen to think about, and we'll chat about more here in the upcoming segments, is why you chose the IPO as opposed to the many other ways that you could have exited the business as well. Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show with Jeff Johnson, Rick Diamond, and Gary Cohen from CO2 Partners. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. Is that the best you can do? Think about where you used this question last, and you'll probably say you were car shopping. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter. As host of the Business Forum Show, I've heard countless stories of success and thousands of tragedies of failure. As I looked at the mental obstacles we put in our pathways by default, I thought about this question. Is that the best you can do? Why not ask it of ourselves? Wouldn't it change everything if we did? The answer is yes. So I wrote the book titled, Is That the Best You Can Do? I drew from the many experiences I've had with people who are clearly not doing their best, and of course, those who were. The difference lies in the mindset and the tactics. Is that the best you can do? It teaches you how to find success by design instead of failure by default. Is that the best you can do? Visit our Facebook page, Is That the Best You Can Do? And then find it on Kindle on Amazon and start changing your life today. I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening. Show. I'm Kevin Hunter with Jeff Johnson, Gary Cohen, and Rick Diamond on the show here today. And gentlemen, we've been chatting about IPOs, and Rick and Gary, you went through a IPO process. One of the questions I had, and Jeff left you with a number of thoughts here before the break, but one of the questions I had for you is why you decided to go the IPO route as opposed to the number of other ways that you could exit a business. And I'd like you to share that story for the benefit of our listening audience to understand the difference.
Yeah, can I start?
Sure.
That, so there's two things. One is we didn't see it as an exit strategy. It was never part of our exit strategy. We, you know, when we went public, how old were we, Rick?
34 years old.
Yeah, so, you know, at 34, we were hardly looking for an exit. What we were looking for was a great deal of learning for two 34-year-olds, and meaning that, how many 34-year-olds do you know who took a company public? Not many. And so our feeling was, what a great skill set to have, and what a great opportunity to learn it and leverage it for our shareholders and for ourselves. So it was really about bringing money in to grow the business further.
Well, and also I'd say it's kind of a misnomer to say that we decided to take ACI public. The public offering kind of chose us. As I mentioned earlier, we had resisted splitting the piece of the pie. I liked having 50%. Gary liked having 50%. We weren't sure we wanted to share. But after almost a year of different investment bankers calling us and saying, we'll give you money for a piece of the company, and we would say, no, we're not interested. And then more investment bankers would call. And as the IPO market heated up in late 95 and early 96, it got to the point where we finally got a call from somebody who said, you know, we're going to give you $7 million for about 23% of your company. So the two of you will still have control, but you're going to have all this cash. And you have to remember, this is at a time when ACI was still very young. We had not even done $10 million a year in revenue at that point. So the thought of Gar and I each having control of the company, but at the same time having all this money to help to invest in the company towards the growth we always wanted to see for the organization, it got to the point where it wasn't a choice. We just couldn't say no.
So if you looked at that on a price basis, it was 36 forward looking. In other words, a year from now, we're going to produce $1 million in earnings. And they were saying, we're going to pay you that today for a portion of your stock. And you're like, really? You know, is this really dumb money or what? I mean, because I don't know how many companies actually sell at 36 forward looking when they're selling their company. However, many lessons learned by answering those phone calls from investment bankers, because they only have one thing in mind, themselves.
Yeah. Before we go into the details of the IPO, let's hear the story of the company. It's very fascinating, and I think it sets the stage for both the IPO process, the difficulties, the wins besides the money, and then life after an IPO. And so let's hear the ACI story.
So there we were. No kidding. Isn't that how all stories should begin?
It should.
Or once upon a time. These two guys that I met in real estate school, one becomes my roommate. I was looking for an apartment. He was looking for apartments. So we shared apartments. And I was out in New York on vacation. And he was there with his business partner doing business. They called me because they knew I was out there. And they said, would you come spy on our competitors? Because they were the guys who were the first to sell predictive dialing equipment. Predictive dialing equipment is the equipment that call centers use today exclusively in order to increase the productivity of their callers. And it does that all sorts of, there's a lot of technology behind it, but if you get a phone call and you get a pause before the person says hello, pretty much it's a predictive dialer.
I know the hang up then.
Yes.
Okay.
No, but actually if you hang up, it resets it. So hanging up is the worst possible thing.
No wonder I get all those.
Exactly. They'll call back. But the thing was, at this time, it was new innovation. It was absolutely cutting edge. Nobody had it because they were the first to sell it. So we knew who had it, and it was nobody. And they were just starting in on this, and they actually found a manufacturer to manufacture it for them. So they asked me to go spy on people who are also coming up with similar technology. So I'm like, I got time to kill, you know, unemployed student, you know, easy enough. So after a day of going from booth to booth at this trade show, I pretty much said, this is really a good idea. So now going back to what Rick and I were talking about prior to this happening, we were thinking of real estate, right? And so I call Rick right away that night, and I go, Rick, I got a great idea. And he says,
what is it?
And I'm like, telemarketing. That's the answer. You know, I'm thinking of The Graduate, where the guy says, remember this, it's plastics. Telemarketing, right? And then Rick says,
we don't know the first thing about the call center business.
Oh, the voice of reason showing up.
And I say, we don't know the first thing about anything. And from there was our beginning, which was Rick goes, you know, you're right. We don't know the first thing about anything. And we began. And literally within 2 months of that, we had put the money in. We had cleared out a closet, literally a closet, in his father's office building. He had to buy a one of those shacks or something.
A shed.
Shed to put in the parking lot so we could unload everything from the – and from there, it was we were off and running.
And at that point, it was certainly a lot of hard work. It was lucky, if not smart, that we ran across this technology that made us 500 or 600% more productive than anything else out there. And most importantly, we were lucky in that we ran across different people along the way who were able to help us to achieve our vision. People who we didn't know it at the time, but one after another would lead us to new plateaus within our business. One of the first ones was a guy named Rick Casey, who we had told we need to hire as a coach. And he knew about the call center business. He worked for United Healthcare. And so we would meet with Rick on the weekends at United Healthcare's shiny new building. This is back in 1987, their headquarters building on 169. We'd meet with him on the weekends, and he would teach us about the business, about scripting, about hiring, about training. And then one day, we're sitting in a conference room at the United Health offices, and Rick's boss walks into the room.
Boss's boss. It was worse,
right?
Because Jody was his boss, so it was...
Yep, and Sue Kamek walks in and drags Rick out of the conference room. And Gare and I are in a panic now, thinking, uh-oh, we're in big trouble.
And we're going like, how is this even possible? Like, we're paying him. And remember, we started with $4,000 less the $200 for the business card. So we're paying him out of pretty much no money to teach us. And we're going, we're in trouble.
And so then Rick comes back into the room and says, all right, you guys need to come back here next week. Sue wants to meet with you and have a chat. So we come back. And we meet with Sue, and we think we're going to get yelled at. You know, we're just a couple of young guys. We don't know any better. We're sitting down in the room, and Sue starts talking about budgets and workload. And so, and she starts mentioning that she's got a lot of work that needs to be done, but she's got a freeze on her payroll budget. She said, by the way, I hate subcontractors. Subcontractors never do what you want them to do. They only do what they want to do. And she said, I heard you guys are in the business of doing call center work.
This is not going well for us at this point.
No. And so she says, you know what? I'm told you guys are just starting in business. And we said, well, yeah, we're just getting going. She said, good. You have no bad habits. We want to hire you because you're going to do exactly what we want you to do. You don't carry any baggage with you.
Talk about going from lead feet to a feeling like you've got helium that you're flying by, you know?
And to make things worse, she says, but I generally don't trust vendors, so I'm going to make you work in our building here. Now, you have to remember, as Gary said earlier,
we
started out literally in a storage closet in the little building my father owned in St. Louis Park. So when she said, you have to work here so I can keep an eye on you, we go from the storage closet to this beautiful new building on 169.
Great story. Kevin, when we come back, we continue that.
Excellent. So, of course, you had to pretend like this is going to be a big disappointment to go from this closet to this glorious building. Kevin Hunter with Jeff Johnson on the Business Forum Show. Our guests today, Rick Diamond and Gary Cohen from CO2 Partners. We'll be back with more on this story about ACI and how it all got started in just a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You
You've been listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcasting worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, Liberated Syndication, iTunes, and multiple media channels connected to the TBFS radio network. If you have any questions or comments for our staff, please reach out to us at info@thebusinessforumshow.com. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and the TBFS radio staff, I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening.